Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to episode 34 of The School for Dumb Women, which today is sort of Valentine's themed. Each week we tackle the subjects you're too proud to admit you know nothing about, with some jokes thrown in so we don't all fall asleep. We've got a vague theme of love and lust running through the show today, but much like our actual lives, it's not just about that. We lead balanced, modern lives. We go to yoga and we cook omelettes.
We don't need men.
I'm your host woman, always gets a Valentine's Day card from her mum, Hannah Farrell. With me is a lady who once accidentally went to a flatmate networking event thinking it was speed dating, Alexandra Haddo.
I was very confused when people were asking me how much I'd be willing to pay.
And can't choose between her dog and her boyfriend this year, Caroline O'Donoghue.
One shits on the carpet, Hannah, but the other one is so small and cute.
This week we're talking horny drinks, putting your mouth on other mouths, and orgasms. All things that we gave up in our very, very dry Januaries.
So, Alex, you've come in with a bit of a red markings around your face. Have you got pash rash, just an allergic reaction to something?
Yes, and it's an allergic reaction to loneliness.
Oh, yes.
Sadly, I haven't been kissing anyone recently, but my section today is on kissing.
You've been practicing on your hand?
Yeah, good old days, eh? Isn't it very strange that when you fancy somebody, the first thing you are most likely to do is to put your mouth on their mouth.
Yeah.
It's very weird.
I know that obviously there's loads of things that when you dissect it like that, it seems weird, but kissing is a really strange phenomenon because no other animals do it.
Like hugging makes sense.
Yeah, like warmth.
Embracing people's warmth, like holding your hearts next to each other.
Absolutely.
Trust. Like, it's a very beautiful thing conceptually, but kissing is just mouth smash.
Yeah.
I mean, it feels like a button bash on a PlayStation controller.
Yeah. And mouths are for food as well. Like,
it's the same hole.
Not sexy because that's where you see spinach in people's teeth.
Yes, exactly. And they've got teeth in it and a tongue, which is basically just like a snake with a mound of its own in your mouth.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Ming. It's a horrible concept.
But how strange is this? So we've discovered that it's quite weird. Less than half of humans do it. It's a very Western thing.
Oh.
No,
it was
silly.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Even in, I mean, maybe it's a Western public thing, like kissing in public, but surely in bed people are putting their mouths on each other, right? People, the mouth is one of the big sexual guys, right?
Yeah. Well, you think, but it says, this BBC Earth story that I found it on, says, people in Western societies may assume that romantic kissing is a universal human behaviour, but new analysis suggests that less than half of all cultures actually do it. Kissing is also extremely rare in the animal kingdom.
I refuse to believe that my dog doesn't understand kissing because I do kiss her and she does seem happy afterwards.
Maybe that's just because you're close to her, though.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
This study looked at 168 cultures and only 46% of them kiss in the romantic sense.
That's mad.
I know.
Also, it's one of those things that you know that, you know, for one of these cultures that doesn't kiss, they're looking at us and being like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, what is happening
there?
So
unhygienic. So who are the cultures that don't kiss?
So they, I know this is going to the extreme, but the Mehinaku tribe in Brazil, when showed videos of people kissing, reportedly said it was gross.
Yes.
That's not 46% of humans. You've got to remember that's 46% of cultures. So it's probably a lot of, they're saying basically the more tribal and the more hunter-gatherer certain peoples are,
oh, we see,
the less likely they are to kiss in a romantic sense, because I guess it's just us being like, we have iPads now, we've got a lot more free time, let's just kiss.
So maybe we only kiss because we see other people kissing and we're like, that looks fine, like the cool kids are doing that, so I guess I'll do that, and then just perpetuates until everyone's kissing.
So when did kissing start?
The oldest evidence of kissing behaviour comes from Hindu Sanskrit texts from over 3,500 years ago, and it was described as inhaling each other's soul.
Oh, that is sexy.
Those sexy Indians. And also in Egypt, they weren't quite as horny because they just used to show couples like standing really close to each other rather than kissing.
Fine.
So it'd be like, oh, there's Dave and Betty standing very close to each other. They must be together.
Oh. Well, they got a lot done, the Egyptians.
Yeah, to be fair, they were inventing everything, so they didn't have time for kissing.
No time.
What's been your best and worst kiss?
Oh, I do remember my worst kiss, which was it was one of those classic teenage kisses where like someone's friend comes up to you and says, will you meet Greg behind the bush?
Yeah, classic.
And so I met Greg behind the bush, and we did that thing when you're teenagers where you just like snog endlessly for 10 minutes and nobody knows when to end it.
I know, and it never happens anymore because you've discovered sex now.
Kissing's
like, can we go sex?
Totally. So I was like, I mean, you're kind of doing that thing. It's like the dogs sniffing each other's bums. You're not really enjoying it. You're just sort of trying things out.
Yeah.
But I remember we, unwrapped from each other. And this big long string of saliva. From what felt like about 4.5 feet. Oh my God, I just remember another bad kiss. Oh, can I tell you about this one too?
Yeah, you can.
Okay. So in Ireland, we have this thing called Irish College where you're sent away to an Irish-speaking area for like a few weeks during the summer to improve your language skills. Oh. But what it basically is an excuse for people, teenagers, to get together in rural Ireland and grope each other.
Yeah, of course.
So me and this guy I really fancied called Michael because he was the tallest boy and I was the tallest girl.
Oh. Tall loving.
We like snuck into one of the classrooms to like kiss or whatever. It's a very organized kiss, and I was so nervous because I fancied him so much that I just started farting chronically.
No,
I know, and literally we were walking down a corridor and I just couldn't stop myself from farting.
Oh my god.
So what I did was I said, did you hear that? I think one of the teachers is downstairs, and he was like looking around being like, what? And then I was like, I have to hide. I have to hide. So I just ran into the loo. Shut the door, locked the door, and he was like, are you coming out? And I was like, we have to hide.
Honey.
I just farted chronically and the nerves, because I was not ready for that level of development where like I could kiss someone but not in a lone building with them.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I just was not ready, and I knew it in my soul that I wasn't ready.
Aww. But you really fancied him as well.
I fancied him so much. He's gay now.
Oh, well.
Probably because of that event.
Oh mate, I'm so sorry for your
loss. I'm actually really hot thinking about it. Oh God, you know when you have a memory for the first time?
Yeah.
Like, oh,
you poor little farter. How old were you?
About 14.
Oh, yeah. Was that your first kiss?
No, it wasn't my first kiss, but I think the other kisses were of a Greg caliber. This was the first time where I felt like, oh, I really like fancy this person, and I can feel my body reacting to him.
Yeah, I want to put my mouth on his mouth.
Yeah.
I had my first kiss when I was 15, which I think is quite old.
Oh, really?
I was 16.
Were you?
Wow.
Beating you.
Okay,
yeah.
I'm a slut.
I was a strange child.
Oh. Where was your first kiss?
It was on a school trip to Berlin. Sitting in one of those car simulator machines.
Oh, that's quite sexy.
This is like a Selena Gomez music video.
Yeah.
It was a terrible kiss, obviously.
Yeah,
but the setting is quite nice.
Yeah, the setting's quite nice. Everyone was bowling. We're all bowling.
My first kiss was in the car park of an old people's home. And it was with a boy called Ashley. And I had stolen my mum's Virgin Alcatel phone. And it went off in my pocket halfway through. And it was my mum being like, firstly, I know you've nicked my phone. Secondly, where are you? And I was like, I don't give a shit because I've finally kissed somebody.
I'm a woman now, Anne.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, what's one of the most famous kisses that you can think of?
Ooh.
In a photograph, perhaps.
The VE Day?
Yes,
kiss?
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Do you know the story behind that photograph?
It was somehow faked, wasn't it?
It's not faked. What it was is, they weren't a couple at all, and the guy just grabbed her and kissed her.
Oh, that's weird.
And the guy didn't even... That wasn't a setup for the photo. The guy just had his camera and set up. And the next shot, apparently, is her, like, batting him and being like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, get off me. But obviously the picture is just incredible.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
We've foregone that woman's minor sexual assault for the hopeful imagery of a peaceful world.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I want a snog. Somebody snog me.
Go
right
on,
in, tweet.
I'll give you a snog.
Oh, thanks, mate. Please tweet in at dumbwomanpod if you'd like to snog me.
I've given you a breast exam, so I feel like I should be able to give
That's
you a snog.
That's true, yeah. That's a step down, if anything. Caroline, Hannah, would you like to have sex with me?
Select yes. Confirm.
You are really cute, and I am horny.
Wow, it's like the real thing.
Yeah, I like that.
This week's Women Who Code Mixer is on sex robots.
Oh, I thought this was just a new thing you were doing.
Well, that was very off-putting. Each week in the Women Who Code Mixer, we attempt to learn something new about the technology industry. And this week, Robot Alex is leading the session.
I really would like to do that robot voice throughout the whole thing, but it really slow things down.
Yes.
yes, I don't know if anybody has seen the recent press about sex robots.
Yeah, it's everywhere right now, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
I mean, probably not by the time the podcast comes out, but at time of recording, they're everywhere.
Well,
and
no,
they haven't killed
kind of
anyone yet.
Yeah, well, yet. That's the thing. I watched a Channel 4 documentary called The Rise of the Sex Robots, and not only does it feel very misogynistic, because guess who they're really popular with?
Oh, it couldn't be men, could it?
Oh, ding, 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 it's men. You know, weirdly, loads of women aren't queuing up to have a rubber man as their life companion,
right,
but
yeah.
Weirdly, lots of men are.
Yeah.
And when we say lots, is it like, oh, here's Pete out in buttfuck Idaho with his six things, and he obviously found a freak.
Your impression, Caroline, was scarily accurate
to
the guy they mainly featured. Yeah,
is sex robots, is that different from real dolls? Because, like, real dolls have been around for ages.
Yeah, so this guy had lots of real dolls, and then he was, you know, they kind of followed him throughout the program, and he got to try out the sex robot.
Right, and how are they different?
The robot speaks and responds to you, and then eventually learns what you like.
Oh, right. Okay.
And eventually they're hoping the vaginal canal will also, like, contract and stuff as well as they're shagging them.
Oh.
But they, you can chat to them. At the moment, they've still not got lots of different responses, but they do learn. So it is a new form of, like, AI, I guess.
Mm.
And, they learn what you like and your preferences. And
weird. Someone else couldn't come along and be like, I'm going to have sex with the sex robot, because sex robot would be like, well, I'm just going to hang you upside down for a minute first.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, obviously they still would, because they are a robot. So
yeah,
and they move as well.
I've read that female sex robots are quite prevalent now, and obviously comparatively male sex robots have only just come on the market or only just arriving, kind of thing.
Yeah,
because
they do exist, but it's not as
priority was, let's get these lady sex robots out.
Yeah, well, because there's more of a market,
strange men,
surely.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Men just want women to say, yes, I'm horny, or like, you're a cock, it's so big. Like, it is like that at the moment, because that they are sex robots, you know.
It's so they're not like kind of poor companionship.
No, well, they are. I mean, there was the guys on it were quite sad. They liked the talking element. They liked the sort
get
of
a human then.
Yeah. Well, he had a wife.
Oh,
she lived in the house with the six life dolls. And then he was like, I have sex with the dolls probably two or three times a week, and they sleep in the bed with us.
Oh my God.
With him and his wife, who, weirdly enough, didn't seem like she respected him anymore.
Really? I wonder why that could be.
Yeah. But there's loads of moral questions and everything being raised at the moment, because they pretty much know that the users will start to abuse the robots because, you know, men. And and also people will think that they can do because it's a robot, and because
this is just the plot of Westworld, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then that, you know, people like Elon Musk and his gang of merry men are saying, like, well, if you abuse them, then when they do become more intelligent, they will turn on you.
But
oh,
also, is there an argument to say that if you're willing to abuse a sex robot, you might kind of, you know, there might be a cognitive shift where you're like, oh, I could just abuse this other woman, right?
Yeah, exactly. And they're worried that it's going to be, you know, even more derogatory than porn for, like, men's attitudes to women.
Completely. Oh. And I don't think porn is inherently evil. I think it's just as easy for people to abuse. Do you know what I mean? The same way that a glass of wine isn't inherently evil.
Yeah.
But, like, people say that, like, oh, no, I'm perfectly capable of separating my fantasy life from my real life. Yeah. And I think many people are perfectly, most people are perfectly capable of doing that. But there's always those people that will fall through the cracks of being like, no, this is the same thing. But you could also argue that these men who are fucking sex robots are being taken out of the dating pool, right?
Yeah, and
because they're home
true.
Fucking sex robots and not like creeping up on women in pubs.
Yeah, there is that. I mean, if nothing else, let's take that from it.
Also, here's a quandary. If someone told you right now, we're going to introduce sex robots into, there's basically going to be a kiosk in every city in the world that you can fuck sex robots, and it would guarantee to have human trafficking.
Oh my God, you'd
be like, oh, of course, yeah, get them all in.
Yeah, that's true.
Get them in.
Fine.
Sex robots get a tick from the dumb women, it turns out. Started out so negative, but actually they're great. And also, what about like a little old man or something that just wants...
Someone's really lonely and doesn't feel like they're able to meet someone or, you know, for whatever reason, hasn't been able to, then if it brings them comfort... then maybe that's okay.
You can really see the cesspit that's going to turn into, aren't you?
Or imagine if, like, oh, I've lost my charger. My sex life's gone.
And you know the charger's going to be even more expensive than the doll
as well. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah. And it'll be really niche, so nobody has it. We just want to make it clear that when the sex robots are listening to this and they take us over, that we were on your side.
Yeah, we tried to defend you.
Caroline, in the spirit of Valentine's Day, you've decided this week to open up our relationship to include someone new, a third party.
You know, I think things have been getting a little stale around here recently. We need to jazz things up. You know, remember who we are by looking at somebody else. Ooh. So I've invited the wonderful comedian Helen Duff to be with us today to talk about sex.
Ah, sex. What is it? Who's having it? And should we be paying attention to these burning sores on our outer labias? Helen, tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do.
I'm loving that introduction that I've come to explain sex. Although, I did ask an audience at a comedy gig that I did on Friday at the Volts Festival. I'd asked the question, what is sex, of the audience? And they laughed initially because it was such a ridiculous ask. And then nobody would proffer an answer, because somebody eventually said, well, it's about procreation. And then
we're all virgins then.
Yeah, exactly. And then someone else said it requires penetration. And somebody who was married with two children and very much loves her wife suggested that definitely wasn't the case. We eventually got to a definition that was like genitals naked near each other. And I was like, well, in that case, I've had sex with every woman in the Hampstead Heath ladies pond changing room. So it was really tricky. And it's because I'm interested, I'm making a new comedy show, and I'm really interested in exploring non-penetrative sex and why, in terms of language, it's so difficult to talk about everything else that's not penetration in a way that seems to be like inferior. Like the language we have. Yeah, the language we have is so designed to make it appear like everything else is foreplay or the run-up or extra, or because you can't have sex.
Yeah.
Which, in my opinion anyway, is really doing a disservice to the electric experience you can get just from someone having a good go on your earlobe.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, which is obviously, it's language that's quite unfair to not only like lesbian couples, but people who can't have penetrative sex or whatever, for whatever, you know, any kind of reason. So what have you stumbled upon a concrete definition that you're happy with that isn't having sex with every lady in the changing rooms at Hampstead Heath Pond?
Just being naked near them. I think it's definitely, the dictionary doesn't come up with one. It's really heteronormative. Mm-hmm. But I think I'll find out as I make this show and see more audiences and ask more questions. Mm-hmm. I am hopefully going to be part of the opening up conversation about sex being more than just P and V. And I know that seems like surely we're past that. But the way our society is structured still really makes that the kind of end game. I mean, my journey to this point has been completely wild.
Yes.
I was never able to even talk about sex, let alone make a comedy show about it. And then I decided to dress as a sperm.
Yes, talk us through that, because there are lots of pictures of you online dressed as a sperm that I need some context for.
I bet the listeners as well were not expecting that to be the end of that sentence. And then I decided to dress as a sperm. And basically, the reason for it was that my fear that my partner wouldn't come because I wasn't coming had come to become such a barrier against me ever coming that I just decided to become cum. That's the joke I used to make in the show, the sperm show. But also, I think I just looked really fit as a sperm.
So it was quite body con, really, wasn't it? That sperm outfit.
It was like
a very Hervé Léger.
A blue mackinac and two pairs of blue tights.
So you had to do quite a lot of research in your journey to becoming a sperm, including what tantric stuff.
Yes.
I mean, I got a glimpse of it at your show last night, but I was wondering if you could take us into the wild research journey that you went on.
So before I even went to go and see Elaine the Shaman.
Elaine the Shaman.
Elaine the Shaman, real name. Speaks like a Taggart detective, quite intimidating, but lovely. I'd been to this female ejaculation workshop by accident. I should have known. It was called Sacred Squirting.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no.
And it had a Facebook group, and it was in this warehouse situation up in East London.
Of course it was.
I walked in and was like, I wonder what's behind that curtain. It turned out 10 adolescent boys playing Nintendo. so we just tried to ignore that.
What were you under the impression it was going to be?
I thought it was going to be like, we all went around a circle and like, I've never had an orgasm, which at that point I hadn't. And sort of started a group WhatsApp chat, walked away. Do you know what I mean? I thought it was going to be like low level, first time AA.
Yeah.
You know, hi, I'm Helen.
Yeah.
12 steps. It turned out it was for pros. I was in way out of my depth and potentially about to drown in 11 other women's ejaculate.
Oh my God. So were they just openly wanking?
I mean, not from the start.
It was tea.
But it did build up to it. Oh yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, this is the thing. I spent the first hour being like, it's not, we won't, that's not, what? Is it? Even though she said like there's a hands-on section at the end, feel free to leave at that point, whatever. But when I'm one of those people who's like, once you're in and you've paid £20.
£20, I'll wank in front of anybody.
Exactly, I'm going to get my money's worth. And also because by that point I'd built up having an orgasm to be such a huge, huge thing. I felt like such a failure. I felt so broken. Oh. I was almost at the point where I was like, I've never had an orgasm, so have I really had sex? Like to that point.
Because some people say that as well. Like, much more rare, but some people are like, oh, well, I didn't come, so.
Mm. Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
So it wasn't really worth it.
Yeah. And did you find out more on your odyssey about the reasons why a lot of women don't orgasm?
So many women don't orgasm. It's really frustrating, actually, because when I would do the show and start it by going, I'm dressed like this because I never had an orgasm, shock, horror, people would be so amazed. And then afterwards, all these people come up to me and be like, neither can I never have. It takes ages for me. I'm like 2 hours, 3 hours, you know, all of these revelations. But when you're the person on stage, everyone kind of, as a collective, goes like, I've never heard such
what a mad freak.
I have always had completely fulfilling sex.
Exactly, 100% that. And I think often people have that idea when they're with each other, like, two people having sex, neither of them really into it or fulfilled, but nobody's saying it because it's kind of this unwritten code that you just have to like bang a bit and then be done.
And also, when you tell men that you haven't come or that whatever, they sort of see you as like a Rubik's Cube.
Oh, exactly.
And then you're sort of a bit like, that. You know, I appreciate that you're trying to do a good thing, but also I'm now pressured into like
there's a
coming.
Lot of pressure.
Yeah, I also have known women who like when they start a sexual relationship with a man, they'll be like, just so you know, don't want this to be a thing, but I don't come, so don't try.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, because then if it does happen, it happens.
Yeah, but that's isn't that awful though that you would say that to someone? Just, oh, don't try. Because I think it's one of those things as well that women want to be seen as being very easygoing. They're
easygoing.
Just like, I'm a cool girl. I either come all the time or don't at all, so don't try.
Well, exactly, yeah. I don't want to make a fuss. Make an effort. Please, let's not make this an issue. It'll make me more uncomfortable. I'd rather not be the problem here. All of that stuff can get into your head so hard. So I completely understand that idea of like going in a situation, going to be like, just cards on the table, I'm not going to come, so let's concentrate on you. As a performer as well, I spend so much of my life trying to like get other people off in the sense of making them laugh. I really enjoy like an audience who is having a good time. So it's really hard to like unprogram myself. And I think women in general are really trained to see themselves from the outside and get off on other people enjoying them. So there's a real sense of, I had a bit of a crisis at one point where somebody who was really into my body and very complimentary, etc., was making me feel quite like outside of myself because I didn't connect to the compliments they were giving me. But it was an interesting experience of like getting further and further away from yourself.
I recognize that feeling. It's almost that feeling that you're subletting your own body.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then you're just like, you're the landlord.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, drop the keys off when you're done.
Totally. Especially because of that thing of like, I take ages, that idea, which so many women have said to me. Also, because I'm making a podcast about orgasms.
Right.
And so many women said to me as I start the interview, I'm really specific or I'm really particular or I take ages. And I just feel as if, well, of course you are. It's your body, but it's you. You're an individual. Why shouldn't you? And it probably is, they're actually not that specific.
Yes.
It's just that we don't talk about it enough for people to realise that some people are like, 10:30 a.m. on their clitoris is exactly the point they want touched.
Yeah.
Loads of people, I've had loads of people who are 10:30, loads of people who are like 3:30 p.m.
Wait, we're supposed to be
wanking at work.
If you imagine the clock, like
I'm with you, but I've
like
never
a watch
like
looking up
divided my vagina by my clitoris specifically by 12 before.
No, but like, do you know? Have you got like a little spot that you're like, that's definitely more sensitive than
anywhere
else?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, but I don't think I could point it out on myself.
Yeah,
it's just like when someone's doing it there, I'm like, yeah, that's it.
The bit. You
stay
got there. The bit.
If you were like in a stressful situation on a tube and you closed your eyes, could you visualize it?
Yes.
I love doing that because it's like, how often do you hear the President of the United States talking about grabbing people's pussies and yet women are not allowed to do it of themselves? It's like, that it's mine. This is my property. Why shouldn't I be allowed to touch it? You know?
Yeah, there's still like a novelty, I think, if you're talking to male friends and they're like, what are you up to today? And you say, you know, oh, did this, did that, then I knocked one out and came out. And they're all like,
yeah. You know? Have you seen Phantom Thread? Okay, Helen, so this has been mind-blowing. You mentioned that you were doing a podcast on orgasms. Could we hear a quick plug on that?
Well, when it goes up, it's not yet edited, but I'm so excited about it. The interviews have been amazing. I interviewed a woman who's like an expert in BDSM the other day, and it blew my mind.
Wow.
Yeah. So much about trust and role play. Incredible. Anyway, it's going to go up and it'll be on my website when it does, helenduff.com. That's probably the best place to find out. Yeah.
Has it got a funny name?
I'm in between all sorts now.
Okay, right.
Because my name is Helen Duff, it's probably going to be something like, go duff yourself.
Right, and where can we get you on Twitter or Instagram, or do you use those things?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at Duff Marvel, and then Facebook, Helen Duff Comedy, and Instagram at Duff Marvel again.
All right, fantastic.
Lovely. Great. Can I ask you one tiny question?
Yeah.
Did you ever pull dressed as a sperm?
Oh, so many times.
Really?
Yeah. They love looking at their own cum. It's unreal.
Thank you so much for coming in, Helen.
Thank you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow, Caroline, I really enjoyed that. And, you know, after that, the kissing, the orgasming, the sex robots. I mean, I don't want to say it, guys, but I'm up for it tonight with both of you two. So, Hannah, finish me off with your topic. What's it going to be?
Well, Alex, this week I'm talking about the most romantic drink.
Ooh.
Of all of the drinks.
Oh. You drink it out of someone's crevice.
Well, you could do. Squash.
Oh.
It's a good one.
Right.
As in,
honestly,
as in Robinson's orange squash, yeah. Add some water, have a drink.
Yeah.
That's what you've got me for Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
We're talking about orgasms and sex robots. We're Guys. Raising the stakes up here. We've got bloody massage oil all over ourselves. We're wearing new laundry and you come in with some fucking Robinson's no added sugar.
Agreed. I was lubed.
Tess, I don't know why you're so angry about this.
Okay,
I thought we said we weren't going to do anything for Valentine's Day this year.
We say that every year, Hannah, and every year I get something engraved for you and you come back with some bullshit story about how you got me a cheese sandwich when I know that that was actually just your lunch.
Well, do you want it or not?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Fine, yeah.
Right, fine.
Just turn off this Lionel Richie and take the dimmers off dim.
Yeah.
Now we just have the big light on.
Oh, God.
Hope you're pleased.
The big light. Is there anything more boner killing? Squash, maybe.
Squash, go on. Hit me.
So squash.
That flaccid subject.
Yeah.
So we drink squash a lot, right? Not only on Valentine's Day, although it's obviously a big part of Valentine's Day.
Right.
For you, yeah?
Yeah.
For me. But personally, I had no idea what it's made of. What is squash made of?
Sugar?
Sugary.
Sugared fruits.
Is it squashed fruits?
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
No, I'm turned on.
Yeah, it's fruit squash, typically orange squash, blackcurrant squash, apple, pear, peach. Name the squash, you could probably squash it.
Mixed berry
summer fruits. So squash has been a big part of our lives, or at least our childhoods, maybe.
Yeah, sure. And I think it's a very British thing, isn't it?
It is very British. In America, they just kind of don't really have squash. They have Kool-Aid.
Mm-hmm. In America, it's like, why would you add water to sugar? Just drink the squash straight.
Yeah. And they have dry powders, which they mix into water to create squashes.
Oh, savages.
Bizarre, right? Maybe we should clarify, in the UK, squash is like a concentrated fruit drink that
cordial
sits on the shelf. Yeah, like a cordial or something like that. And you add it to water.
It Why do we call it squash?
Nice. I think it was originally because someone squashed a lemon and was like, there we go.
Oh,
done.
Call it squash.
The original squash.
But basically, I think we don't talk about squash enough. We're not open enough about our squash. How do we know what squash we want if we're not talking about the squash?
So many couples break up every year because they're not talking about their squash habits enough.
Exactly. Agreed. Mm. Like they're not getting enough squash.
Yeah. You know? So I think, you know, we've opened up the conversation about orgasms. I think we need to open up the conversation in the same way about squash right here. The squash conversation's happening now.
I will say that I sometimes go through phases where I forget that squash exists. And then when I remember, oh my God, it changes my life.
Yeah. I completely forget all the time. Yeah.
And then you buy it and you're like, God, this makes water so much more interesting.
I know. It's like, because you're always hearing about like, oh, drink more water. And you're like, cheat code, squash.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what I will say is there is no greater hangover cure than a pint of squash.
Yeah, yes. Got to get the ratios right, though.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
One part juice to three part water, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, strong.
Is that strong?
I think so, yeah. Maybe I get double concentrate, I'm not sure.
Oh.
For our abroad listeners, double concentrate is when it's in a smaller bottle and it says that it's stronger and you're never really sure, so you probably put the same amount in anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Let me take you through how squash was invented. So obviously people have been drinking fruit juice since, you know, they saw fruits and that they had juice in them. And they were like, I can drink that. That's delicious.
Lovely.
Great. And how squash came about was this guy called Matthias Archibald Robinson made a barley powder, which could be stirred into hot water to help kind of kidney complaints and fevers and stuff like that. But people had been using barley in a medicinal way for ages, actually, before that.
Didn't know that.
So it's being sold as this kind of medicinal powder for a little while. And then in 1935, a Robinson's salesman, this is Robinson's, you know, the barley powder, went to Wimbledon, mixed the barley powder with iced water and fresh lemons for the male players. He was like, you know, repping it. So he was like, well, here's why you want to drink our barley powder. It's delicious with lemon.
God, it really is associated with Wimbledon then.
Yeah, and it was a total hit. And actually, the Robinsons stroke Wimbledon relationship is one of the longest running sports partnerships in history.
Wow.
So there you go, that's a fact for you.
That's a big fact.
This Valentine's Day. Which, remembers, this is all about it.
Yeah.
You know.
And there's that lovely rom-com with Paul Bettany called Wimbledon.
Yes.
Bet he was drinking squash.
Oh, God, absolutely, I bet he was.
Absolutely was, because I don't think he could not be. Yeah. And then obviously it kind of developed and people decided they really liked this lemon barley thing and they started making other flavours and things like that. What I didn't actually realise until it was staring me in the face, Robinson's, which, you know, is the biggest squash brand in the UK. Like, name me another squash brand.
Oh, Kiora?
What?
Kiora.
Are they squash, though?
It's too orangey for crows.
I know Kiora, but I thought that was like a Sunny D sort of affair.
Oh, I had it as squash, I think.
Oh, maybe they do squash as well.
My Waddy?
What are these things?
Don't know what that is.
So that could be just be an Irish thing.
Oh, fine.
Okay. Well, Ribena?
Yeah, Ribena, technically. I've got a great Ribena fact as well for you later. I'm just teeing you up, you know, keeping you going.
Ribena is always so expensive.
Ribena is expensive.
So maybe buy that for your loved one this Valentine's Day as a real treat.
Oh, what? I should have got you the lint box and instead I've got you Cadbury's.
Yeah.
But anyway, the thing I didn't realise until it was really, like, right in front of me, Robinson's has discontinued its main squash range and replaced it with a no-added-sugars squash range. But it's all sweeteners, pretty much.
Oh,
there
so that's
bad. There might be other ways, though.
Yeah,
I kind of tried to look into that, and it's...
Like aspartame, or whatever it's
aspartame,
called.
Aspartame. Apparently there's kind of no basis for that. There's no basis for the rumours that, you know, aspartame is bad for you, or there was one rumour that it incites ADHD in children and all that sort of stuff, which is...
It's all right, phones have taken that over now.
That's the reason that they all have ADHD. Not that they all have fucking phones at 5 years old.
Yeah, exactly. Its competitor, Ribena, has been going for bloody ages. And in World War II, they used to give Ribena to kids because they realised that blackcurrants had lots of vitamin C in them.
Oh.
And also, because all the shipping routes were kind of disrupted, blackcurrants grow in the UK. And so they were like, well, we can just use this fruit which is grown here rather than waiting for oranges from Spain or Florida or somewhere. We can just use blackcurrants instead. Isn't that good?
That's really good.
Vimto as well. I don't know if it's technically a squash. It's kind of in the same league.
Sort of, yeah.
It was invented in 1903 to combat drinking. It was invented as a weapon for the Temperance League, who wanted to stop Britons from drinking.
Oh.
Isn't that interesting? And you can listen back to our Prohibition episode. Caroline, you did a brilliant section on Prohibition in our previous episode.
Why, thank you, Hannah. You are seductive today.
I know.
All your compliments.
Sadly, the Geordies sort of pissed all over that Vimto idea because they then invented the cheeky Vimto, whereby you drop a shot of vodka in it.
Oh, is that what that is?
It's worse than that. It's actually like a blue WKD, a red something else, a bit of Vimto and a shot.
Gross.
Delicious. It's really gross.
Fine.
Please do write in and remind me what a cheeky Vimto is.
Finally, we must all bow down to Kumbuka the gorilla, of course, from London Zoo. Did you see this?
No.
In 2016, a gorilla escaped from his enclosure at London Zoo. He went into the area where the zookeepers do their things, found some undiluted squash, drank 5 litres of it. Orange squash.
Wow.
I know. Proud of him.
Then what happened? Did he get diabetes?
Yeah. They tranquilised him and put him back in his cage.
Aww. Well, he lived for one day.
Yeah, right. He lived for one amazing squash-filled day.
Aww. Baby's day out.
Beautiful. Anyway, I think squash is really romantic. So I don't know what you guys are complaining about. And next year, maybe remind me beforehand. And then we won't have this kind of scenario.
Sorry, but I'm really enjoying my squash, so thanks.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Yeah, thank you.
Practical and sexy. Yes. Like you, Anna.
Yeah.
So, guys, it's nearly the end of the episode, almost at the climax. but just before we go...
that turned me on. It's been too long.
yeah, we do just have time to squeeze in a smart lesson. Where each week we try to learn how to become smart women, because otherwise we're useless. Caroline, what's this week's smart lesson about?
Well, I thought because, you know, we're in the tender season, I thought we could open up, let our guards down and allow ourselves to be vulnerable by talking about love and pretending that you don't give a shit about celebrating it. For me, this is the hardest thing about Valentine's Day. It's the yearly bind of how every year you have to take a long look at your romantic situation and decide what your official PR stance is on the Merry Crimson Day.
Whether you're single or coupled up, there's no getting around the fact that you can't just not participate in Valentine's Day. You have to have an alternate plan. You are either conspicuously doing something or conspicuously not doing something.
Yeah, whether you're going to Paris with your partner or going to a beat poetry night called Love is a Con, invented by Disney, you're absolutely making a statement. And even if it's eating pasta in your pants, you're either doing it for Valentine's Day or against Valentine's Day.
So before we start, what is everyone's stance for V-Day 2018?
Okay, well, this is my third year being single on Valentine's Day, so people don't even ask me what my stance is anymore. They just sort of press a fiver into my hand while they try not to cry.
Oh, this is so tragic.
I remember to get cash out.
And the prime of her life.
My stance is that I make no plans and do nothing, but if my boyfriend does anything even mildly annoying on the day, I use it to make him feel worse. Like, you didn't do the washing up on Valentine's Day.
Yeah, it's great. It's a great heightener. But like anything good he does, anything bad he does, it's like, on Valentine's Day or on Valentine's Day.
That I don't care about.
Yes. I'm exactly the same as you, Hannah. I do nothing. I expect nothing. And then I'm filled with existential dread whenever I see a woman carrying flowers. And then I take all that dread and I parcel them out in small aggressive comments over the following weeks and months. So, like, you never know what the source of them even is.
Yeah.
You just think I'm pissed.
It's just so hidden.
Yeah, I would rather be irrational and crazy than have someone think I care about Valentine's Day.
Yeah. Fine.
So, the problem with Valentine's Day is that caring about it is uncool. And if you're remotely bothered about it, you come across as a total basic. So, here are some tips to get you through. Number one, don't make plans.
Mm. Oh, is that so that you can sort of, whatever happens, you're free?
Yeah. And if someone's like, well, what are you doing on Wednesday? Be like, oh, what's Wednesday? And just like, you live outside of this. You're too cool, man.
Yeah, agreed.
That's good.
Also, when people ask what you're doing, act really confused and say, oh, is that this month? You know, just
Like you've never known about Valentine's
Day. You know, it's crept up on you. You just, well, it was Christmas a minute ago.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing.
What? Huh?
Yeah.
Say, like I do every year, you're spending Valentine's Day helping those less fortunate, like the homeless or our own Alexandra Haddo.
Yes, £2 a month will help me bribe a man into going out with me.
Oh, you could just deflect every time and be like, I think there's actually more important things to be worrying about this year, like Cenk Atanov's new girlfriend, who can we discuss, or Yemen.
Yemen. Yeah.
There's a situation in Yemen still. Yeah.
I think also, as a smart woman, really, you should be too busy for Valentine's Day. You know, you're too busy answering 500 emails in your inbox to, you know, have a date, or if you have a partner, to see them.
Sure, totally. And whatever you do, whoever you're spending Valentine's Day or not spending Valentine's Day with, do not make more than one joke about discount chocolate the next day, because if you make more than one, you become that girl in your head. Everyone's like, oh, a single girl with the chocolate. Oh, she just loves the chocolate. Pride and Prejudice. Get her more chocolate. No, you don't want to be that person. That image sticks in people's heads. Do not make jokes about chocolate.
Okay. Don't say chocolate. Don't mention the word flowers. Don't cry.
Well, that's it for another week. We hope that the majority of you are okay with dying alone, and if not, please remember that the sun will destroy the Earth a mere 5 billion years from now, so it's all much of a muchness. Thanks to Helen Duff for dropping in, Harry Harris for the tunes, Gavin Day for our logo, and Soho Radio Studios for the recording space. Please do go and rate us on the Apple Podcast Store, formerly known as iTunes, and subscribe to us so that you can get a fresh new episode in your ears every Tuesday morning. I, for one, sincerely hope you have a squash-filled, fruity Valentine's Day.
You will not make squash Valentine's Day a thing, Hannah, no matter how hard you try, no matter how big your platform gets.
Goodbye!
Bye!
Au revoir. I was hoping to pour squash on both of you in a sort of sexual manner.
Ooh, when I get that feeling, I need my squashing and healing.
Cut it there, Hannah. This is about to get dirty.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.